You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up at 6, WPR's election coverage kicks off on the Ideas Network with a special hour of NPR's On Point. At 7, all WPR stations will carry NPR's politics team, providing coast-to-coast returns on the presidential race and battleground legislative coverage. After the polls close in Wisconsin at 8, WPR will bring team coverage of state races. Stay with us all night for up-to-date election results.
Right now, election season, especially a presidential election season, brings a lot of people into public participation. People vote. They talk about politics. Some people get more involved, signing up to work at a polling station or work the phone bank or go door-to-door for a candidate or an organization.
What about the rest of the year? What happens when there's not a high-profile election to draw people into public participation? Our next guest studies civic engagement, the way people participate in politics and their communities, often through civic organizations. And he sees changes in American culture led in part by social media and a new generation finding different ways to get involved.
Chris Wells joins us now. He's an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison and the author of The Civic Organization and the Digital Citizen, Communicating Engagement in a Networked Age. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Thanks a lot. Great to be here.
Well, as we mentioned, civic engagement is more than just voting. When you're talking about civic engagement, what other activities, what kind of things are people doing that you're interested in?
Often we talk about a distinction between civic engagement and political engagement, although both we often refer to colloquially as civic engagement. So on the civic side, it would often be the more community-type activities that aren't necessarily explicitly political, don't have anything to do with a party or an election, but it's the things you do in a community. So you might volunteer at a hospital or something like that. That's a really civic activity. Or you might be a member of a community organization that decides how to spend some money or something like that. Then you have a whole range of political activities as well. So participation in political parties and those classic forms of engagement, but also calling your legislator if you feel a certain way about an issue, or even talking to your friends or posting something now on social media that reflects sort of an expression of how you feel.
Let's get into those civic organizations. When I hear that phrase, I think of things like Rotary, Kiwanis, that kind of group. Is that one of the things we're thinking about with civic organizations?
Definitely. So Kiwanis and Rotary, Lions Club are really classic civic organizations in the American civic experience. 100 years ago, many of us would have been a member of one of these or even multiple of these, and they would have been really important in how we interacted with public life. It would have been a core part of our identity. That's less true now, but certainly those groups are still around, and there are some other groups that play really important roles in civic life and also in organizing the public for political activities.
It's been a few years now, but the sociologist Robert Putnam wrote his book, Bowling Alone, about how we're not getting together to bowl together and a lot of other things. You mentioned there's been a decline in people's participation in these civic organizations. Is that part of the same phenomenon? We're not joiners anymore like we used to be?
Yeah, so the way that I think of it is civic engagement has been largely deinstitutionalized. So it doesn't take place so much in these large organizations, which were some of the things that Robert Putnam was really interested in, like the Kiwanis Club and Lions, where you have a formal organization and you have leaders that are probably elected in some form and formal membership roles where you have to show up or you have to pay something like dues to be a member. So that's the kind of participation that has declined. That doesn't mean people aren't participating anymore, but they tend to do it outside of those kinds of institutions in more personalized ways.
Is there a similar thing going on with political parties where once upon a time a person might have actively gone to the local Republican or Democratic county meeting and now they answer yes to the pollster or pick a candidate based on that party alignment and that's it?
Or even not that. So we're seeing increasingly people are identifying as independents. So the gap of people who don't identify with either Democrats or Republicans or a third party is much larger. And so especially among millennials, so people under 35, a plurality of them have selected independence. They don't choose any of the parties.
Talking to Chris Wells from UW-Madison, looking at civic engagement, how we do it, how it's changing. And you mentioned, Chris, people aren't doing it as much as they used to through a formal organization, whatever that might have been. Does that mean we are less engaged, period?
There's a lot of debate about that. So in some ways, you could say yes, because those organizations structure such important parts of our civic engagement system. But on the other hand, there's lots of forms of participation that you can point to that people weren't very involved in a while back.
What kind of things?
So if you think about things like protest activities, the portion of people who have been involved in a protest or demonstration is pretty small. It's usually less than 10% in a survey. But it's actually larger than when that question was asked in the 1970s or even 60s, which we think of as a really large protest era. So people are definitely aware of the option to go out and express themselves in a public arena in that form. Certainly social media and new media in general have opened a lot of opportunities for political engagement as well. Perhaps the most basic is just sharing things on social media, something that you agree with. It might be an article or it could be something from a political party or organization that you're sharing and trying to make other people aware of. So that's really a form of involvement too.
But I wonder, does it count the same if you are in that organization or you're the person who's going to the community meetings or that, for Parks and Recreation, doing the Leslie Knope work where you show up in the thankless meeting week after week to get the park built, the block party created, the town cleaned up, whatever the thing may be, versus I share a link or I show up at a protest now and then. Is it the same?
That's a critical point. I'm not sure we can say whether it's the same or not, but I think you raised the really important point that involvement in those civic organizations that, as you point out, were often dull and laborious and tedious. They were critical for a lot of aspects of our community life, and they still are, and they're still being done by critical volunteers in our communities. So a really big question, especially for people who are trying to design some of the socio-technical systems, is how can we keep people involved? How can we maintain a level of commitment when a lot of people are preferring to at least begin their involvement through social media or some other digital form?
Well, we are, of course, on Election Day. I wanted to ask about one subset of trying to create a sustained organization, and that's, can you take something from a presidential campaign and build an organization going forward? People thought the Green Party Ralph Nader run, that was going to be an ongoing boon to Green Party organization. Didn't really pan out. Now people talk about the Bernie Sanders campaign. Can that translate into something? You could look at something with Donald Trump, maybe the same thing. The Tea Party had some success there. What do you think about translating a political effort into an ongoing engagement effort?
I think you're going to see Bernie Sanders running up into some of the same challenges that Ralph Nader did, for the reasons that we've just talked about, that a lot of people aren't seeing those institutional avenues as really exciting ways to participate. The Tea Party's an interesting contrast because it was largely made up of middle and maybe upper middle class white people who, by and large, are still the most committed to those traditional forms of civic engagement. So in some ways, it had a built-in advantage that its main constituents were more prone to that type of civic involvement. Bernie Sanders, I think, is going to have a bigger challenge with that. And we've already seen with his Our Revolution political organization that it has struggled to keep its momentum even in these early stages.
You mentioned middle and upper class. That makes me think there was once upon a time an organization through which a lot of working class people got involved in politics and in community efforts. It was called a union, and numbers are way down. How significant is that gap, not just in electoral politics, but in community engagement?
Yeah, so let me talk about unions in a second. But in addition to unions, which were critical for especially working class people, a lot of these larger civic organizations like Kiwanis or Lions or the veterans organizations were really important because they were cross-class organizations. Mm-hmm. They might not have been cross-race, and they might have been racist a long time ago, but they were critical because they actually integrated the social classes. So the decline of those things, I think, has contributed to some of the social fragmentation that we see between social classes. But unions in particular were critical because, as you say, they gave a voice to working people. And they are way down since their highs in the, I think, 1960s, 1970s. Union membership in the private workforce is way down, which means that one of the main avenues for working class people's political influence has been largely removed.
Chris Wells is with us. He's an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. We're talking about civic engagement, involvement in politics and our communities even when it's not election day.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you a member of a service organization or a political advocacy group? Did you get involved in local issues, showing up for a local government committee meeting, perhaps, advocating for or against changes in your community? Do you go online to get involved? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear your story coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're continuing our conversation with UW Communications and Journalism Professor Chris Wells. He studies civic engagement and public participation. We're talking about public involvement in politics and communities above and beyond Election Day.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you get involved in public life? Politics, sure, but local decision-making, doing things to improve your local community, Wisconsin, the world? Are you a member of a community group, a service organization like Rotary, Kiwanis, Oddfellows, Optimist, Lions, or other group, or maybe an activist organization, and you participate in online activism? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Chris, we were talking about a lot of old-time forms of participation. Going to those meetings, participating in groups is on the decline. Karen on Facebook writes, the biggest impediment to social engagement is the long, irregular hours we're being asked to work. We can't get to regular meetings. And I've heard people with community groups say, we love students and retirees for, I think, exactly that reason.
Yeah, that's right. So that's something that we're finding in the research. You mentioned Robert Putnam earlier. So when he did his work in the 1990s, he was trying to figure out why are people not participating in these groups the way that they used to a few decades before that. And originally, he actually pinned the blame on television. So he thought that he noticed that the declines began in the 1960s, around the time that basically all American households got TV. And so he sort of pinned it on TV. More generally, though, what was going on was what we refer to as the privatization of leisure time. So the time that you don't have to be at work, what are you doing with it? Are you spending it with a community organization, or Putnam thought you were spending it in front of a TV? But in fact, I think as we've learned more, we see that people's working hours, and especially in a neoliberal economy in which people are being forced to work multiple jobs, work very regular hours, their lives are more stressful, more strung out, and more irregular, so that what leisure time they have stops being something that they can consistently commit to a civic organization. So that's an important part of the story.
Let's bring in a caller now at 800-642-1234. Elizabeth is with us in Schaulsburg. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
What did you want to bring up, Elizabeth?
Well, I have four younger brothers. I'm already graduated out of high school. I work most times. And I noticed that sports is a really big thing nowadays. Everyone's at least four sports a year. And most community activities is either involved with the church, with youth group meetings, and that really tends to more younger people. I mean, elementary students, middle school students, high school students, not so much. Hmm. And then 4-H and FFA is still a big thing, but it's not as popular as it used to be. When I was in high school, it was actually required that you had to have so many civic hours in before you could actually graduate, and they discontinued it because too many students were busy with their grades, academics, and sports. It's kind of sad to see that it's not as popular as it used to be or needed, I guess.
Elizabeth, thank you so much. You brought up so many interesting points. Chris, I'll let you run where you want to with that. A lot you could choose from there.
Yeah, so Elizabeth is describing some of the classic civic infrastructure of especially rural areas with 4-H clubs and Future Farmers of America and those types of organizations that traditionally, but still do, and 4-H is still very strong in a lot of places, give young people some key early experience in these types of civic organizations. And one thing that we do know from research on what we refer to as civic socialization, so how young people become socialized into civic norms, is that those types of activities in childhood are really important. It's too bad what the caller is describing about the opportunities being less and the emphasis increasingly going to academics and other things rather than maintaining that civic momentum.
Thank you, Elizabeth, so much for that call. We'll go next to Adam with us in Viroqua. Adam, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, what'd you want to tell us about, Adam?
Well, I'm like said to the producer that I'm member of a motorcycle club down in Soldiers Grove, and we do a lot of stuff for the community. But I'm also a member of the Sons of the American Legion, and then I'm also a member of the Eagles. And the biggest reason that I got involved with all of that was because I want to do things for the community, because there really isn't much out there, you know, to do it. But I also found out, being in the motorcycle club, that a lot of the younger, and even with the Eagles, a lot of the younger, and I'm talking, you know, 20s and down, they don't want to join any clubs anymore because there's nothing in it for them. You know, that's one of the biggest complaints that I had. It's like they don't want to do something because they have to. They want to do it because they want to, and they're not getting really anything out of it.
Adam, thanks a lot for that call, and I'm guessing his organizations are not the only ones, Chris, with that concern about younger people not joining.
Oh, that was just so eloquently put. Absolutely. That's a major trend that we see across the board. So we've talked about some of the reasons behind that, but there is this issue of commitment also, I think, that we notice with younger citizens, that they tend to be quite attuned to the sorts of benefits that they're going to get from a particular kind of participation, and they may not find it as satisfying or rewarding to simply be a member of an organization that may be doing something for the community. And I think that comes from a lot of places, but to go back to something the previous caller said, especially at sort of the high school level, we put a lot of pressure on students to succeed in these highly individualized ways. So, you know, grades are completely individualized. You get one. And if you're spending your time doing something else, you're punishing yourself when it comes to your grade. So there is a generational issue there, and we're seeing it in research just the way that the caller describes it.
Adam, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Chris Wells from UW-Madison about civic engagement. Declining in some ways, changing, maybe growing in some others. We'll go back to our callers now with Terry in Green Bay. Terry, hi.
Hello, good afternoon. I kind of wanted to expand a little bit on some earlier notions, and mine kind of goes towards, you know, kind of throwing out the book when it comes to civics entirely, and kind of focusing on just the name of what you're talking about here, civic engagement, and kind of planting the seed at a younger age in regarding to, you know, getting involved in groups and advocating for issues and, you know, being part of things at a younger age and what that means at a local level and how they can also affect change. It's not about just going to the voting booth on the election day and cashing a vote. It goes well beyond that and getting involved with things, and we need to plant that seed at a much younger age.
Terry, thanks a lot for that call. So you're saying start early, maybe scrap or cut back on the civics education and add more civics experience at maybe an elementary school.
Yeah, that's a great idea. We don't have a whole lot of civic education mandated in our country as it is, and in a lot of places it's fallen by the wayside, especially as we increasingly are teaching to the test and emphasizing STEM activities and so forth. So I think there's a lot of progress to be made in the civic education arena as well. But I would also add that if you're a parent raising a kid, again, we know from the socialization studies that basically the biggest imprint on young people, on children when it comes to civics and a lot of other things, is their parents' activities. So if their parent is doing something, so my wife and I took our sons to vote today, which they liked because they got cookies. but if they're doing that or participating in other ways, that's one of the main ways that children will pick up their habits for civic life as they grow older.
As we start to wrap up, Chris, the white working class, that seems to be one of the biggest gaps in participation and opportunities to participate. What do you see coming up in the years ahead to maybe change that?
Yeah. So some of the biggest gaps and some of the greatest losses. So when we look at, you know, a big part of Donald Trump's story has been the frustration, economic, cultural, other ways that his white working class voters have felt. If you look at their opportunities for civic engagement and really their opportunities for influencing the political process through traditional mechanisms, organisms, that's where you really see the decline of unions as having a big effect. And, you know, I have to wonder to what degree that feeds a sense of powerlessness, because that's really what it is when your core institutions for engaging with the political process have declined so much. So I'll be really curious to see what is done in the next 4 years, whoever wins the election, to give those sorts of citizens more opportunity to engage with more traditional forms of politics than the Trump campaign has represented.
And you've studied a lot of digital engagement as well. We've only scratched the surface there. Is there a hybrid form, maybe a way for the traditional service organizations to spread their wings digitally and maybe get the best of both worlds?
Yeah, that's where some of the most exciting work is being done, is figuring out, especially when we're trying to reach these millennials who might be a little bit commitment focused, as we talked about with Adam, how we're going to reach them and give them entry points that make sense to them and are workable for them, while at the same time connecting them to those organizations that are so important for civic community life as well as political engagement.
We'll leave it there. Chris, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking to Chris Wells. He's an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. He's the author of the book, The Civic Organization and the Digital Citizen, Communicating Engagement in a Networked Age. We still want to hear your story, by the way. If you are engaged, if you're a member of one of these service organizations we were talking about earlier, the Kiwanis or Rotary or others, tell us about that on the Central Time Facebook page. If you're not, if you don't participate, talk about what could get you on board, what some of the hurdles are to getting involved in the community around you. Tweet us at Central Time WPR or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.